You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. What if you could look back to the way things were just a tiny bit after the Big Bang? Or even better than looking back, what if you could recreate some of the conditions that existed then? Well, scientists working with an accelerator at Brookhaven National Laboratory may have done it, though there's still some question about it. And they've done it by smashing gold ions together at enormous energies, and they may have created a state of matter called a Clark gluon plasma. Stay with us on this. You'll understand what a Clark gluon plasma is, I guarantee it. It's really a state in which the basic particles inside the nucleus can run free. We're freeing the quarks, as they would say in the 60s. Free those quarks. Why such the excitement and caution? Joining me now to talk about the results is Barbara Yatsak, professor of physics at Stony Brook University and member of the Phoenix Collaboration. That's one group of experimenters working with the Relativistic Heavy Ion Collider, the RHIC, at Brookhaven. She joins me here in our studios in New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell us what you have done and why, you know, everybody's so excited about it.
So what's the quark gluon plasma? That's what we're trying to study at the collider at RIC. This is a particle accelerator built by the Department of Energy at Brookhaven National Lab. We're nuclear physicists, and our work deals with an adjacent set of issues to dark matter, dark energy, and string theory that listeners might be familiar
with. So you smashed what together?
We're smashing gold ions together, and the goal is to have a look at these elusive quarks.
Why? Now, quarks are usually bound up very tightly inside the nucleus, right?
And
no one has really ever seen them
absolutely
free.
And they are what make up the protons and the neutrons and all of the atoms in the universe and all of the stuff that we have.
And what binds the quarks together?
They are actually held together by exchanging other particles called gluons.
That makes sense. They would be called gluons.
Yeah, it's a creative name.
Those physicists work hard. They've got colors and things. Now we have a gluon. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. And the binding actually is what gives rise to the strong interaction, and that's one of the four basic forces in nature.
So you think now that you have done the unthinkable, that is to unbind those quarks.
Well, we think so. We are producing, certainly in these heavy ion collisions, these two gold nuclei that slam together at about the speed of light, a speck of very hot, very dense matter. Mm-hmm. And we think that inside this speck of matter is where the quarks and gluons dissociate and form a quark-gluon soup. Mm-hmm. And what we're really trying to do is to learn, how does this stuff work? How hard is it to compress that? How well does it transport energy around? And those are important because they tell us things about what happened just after the Big Bang when the universe started.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about freeing those quarks. Yet even when you made the announcement, you were a little bit skeptical yourself, because no one has done this before, and you wanted to make sure that this had happened.
That's right. We know that we are creating a new form of matter that's unlike anything we've actually ever seen in the lab before, and we know we can turn it on and off by controlling the type of collision that we make. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the maybe we're not sure is of the nature of what's in a name, because we're getting some first glimpses of how the quark gluon plasma works. And interestingly enough, it doesn't look like what we expected.
What do you mean it doesn't look like?
Well, it's a lot more sticky, the interactions between the quarks and the gluons.
Well, it's gluons, and why should it be less sticky?
Well, it turns out that what we expected from the theory of quantum chromodynamics, namely the theory underlying the strong interaction, is that once you form a plasma, then the quarks and the gluons don't interact very much with each other. Mm-hmm. And the data don't agree with that. The
interaction. Hate it when that happens, right?
Oh, it's wonderful. That's when you really start to learn new things.
That's the whole idea of basic research, right?
Absolutely. That's what keeps us up in the middle of the night trying to find out what's really going on.
Obviously, you don't have little children, or they would keep it. In all seriousness, how far back have you gone toward when all this was taking place at the beginning of the universe?
Well, we think a couple of microseconds after the birth of the universe.
Really?
Yeah.
So 10 to the minus something.
Yeah, 10 to the minus 6 or so.
10 to the minus 6 or so. Can you go back further?
I think with with these collisions, probably not. But that's an extremely interesting time to go back to, it turns out, because we don't know very much about the quark gluon plasma itself, and the cosmologists also don't know that much. They've made some simple assumptions based on the best theory that we have available now, and what they assume actually determines how the universe expands, determines where the matter ends up in the universe. And if we find out that what we thought was true isn't, then we're going to have to change our picture somewhat. Maybe that'll help us understand where the galaxies really ended up, why they ended up there.
But why you could learn from going back to the subatomic world why the galaxies. What's the tie?
Well, the tie is that the way the quark gluon plasma turns into normal matter can determine how the matter ended up in the universe, because if the universe underwent this phase transition, which we think it did, then whether the matter is very clumped together or not will actually determine where we find matter now.
Mm-hmm. Now that you've been able to free the quarks and the gluons.
We think.
How will you know? What do you need to be convinced?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that it's going to take some time for the nuclear physics community to come to some consensus on which observations actually constitute a scientifically rigorous proof. A lot of us, you know, as individuals, we're pretty sure that we are making and studying quark gluon plasma, but we need to write the papers that go off to the refereed journals that say discovery of, and here's why.
So you announced this at a meeting, but no one has recreated it independently? Can any other lab do this?
Well, there is another lab in Geneva at CERN, which is also working in this field. In fact, I worked at experiments at CERN before Rick started up. Those experiments were at about one-tenth the energy, and I think we were getting close there. Mm-hmm. They will have a very high energy some years from now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really more a scientific question of when are we really ready that to state absolutely unambiguously we've proven that it's there.
Hmm. Let's talk about some of the weird things that took place in this experiment. There was a report of a particle containing five quarks? Isn't three the normal number?
Absolutely. In fact, sometimes there are particles also with two. So the twos and threes are normal. We think we understand those. In fact, I would say we know we understand those. The data from Rick suggests that we've created an anti-pentaquark, which is the first of its kind.
Penta for five. Anti means it's an antimatter particle.
That's right, and there's five antiquarks bound together. And we didn't really expect that. It's important, though, because it teaches us a lot more about the forces that bind quarks together.
What would you learn from five instead of three or two?
Well, the way that they bind together actually tells you how the force works. It's we have some idea of how it works, how a gluon is exchanged between two quarks, but when you're exchanging between three, four, and five, then it's a lot more complicated.
Well, if most matter is made out of three quarks or five quarks or two quarks, when you find five together, is that a new form of matter?
Oh, well, that could be, you could call it that.
Is there a name? Well, you gave it a name. Does that mean it belongs to some form of matter we don't know?
Well, it is a normal form of bound matter. It's just unusual. And it was quite a surprise for the experimenters, not only at RIC, but at other labs that have also seen pentaquarks, because these things have been there, and we hadn't found them until rather recently.
Mm-hmm. What other unusual things did you discover?
Well, I mentioned that the matter is very sticky. And besides the fact that it interacts very strongly, it creates very large pressure gradients very quickly.
It does what?
It makes a very high, when we collide the two gold ions together, we get a very high pressure. And it happens very fast, and this little blob explodes. Now, some pressure you would expect, but it turns out to be much higher than we initially expected it to be. And also...
And that's because...
Well, that's because they interact so strongly. Now, if you ask me why do they interact
so strongly...
That was
my next question.
We don't know yet.
That's what I wanted. I love it when physicists say they don't know yet. It's so much fun.
But you have to notice I said yet.
But for everybody out there who's driving their car saying, I don't know what she's talking about, and then they hear that you say, I don't know yet either, that makes them feel a little bit better.
That's right.
Okay.
The other interesting thing is that we've seen that we expect some jets of high momentum particles based on what we see when we just collide single nucleons
together.
That's
the debris coming out of the explosion.
That's right. And when they're very high momentum, right, we expect them to come out also from the most energetic head-on collisions of two gold nuclei. And the big surprise is that they don't. And we think that what's happening is this dense soup of matter, some people like to call it a goo, actually causes some particles to lose energy and get stuck. And the data show that the further the jets have to travel through the goo, the more likely they are to get stuck.
Hmm. How long does this soup last for?
Oh, it's extremely short. It lasts for about 10 millionths of a billionth of a billionth of a second. So we have to look pretty fast.
How many zeros is that? 10 millionth of a billionth of a billionth of a second.
Yeah, it's a lot of zeros.
It's a lot of zeros.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, it's interesting because your next question is probably, how do you look so fast?
Are you looking at my notes here? No, that was my next.
Well, it's the next question one would wonder about, right?
How do you see something that happens so quickly?
Well, what we do is we have four very sophisticated detectors. They're sort of like giant digital cameras, and each one measures slightly different sets of information about the collisions. Those capture the action. Mm-hmm. We have very powerful computers to store and analyze the data. Actually, we analyze the data on processor farms of hundreds of machines. Mm. About 1,000 physicists from around the world pore over the data. And in order to be able to do this, we're really pushing the technology in computing and electronics. For example, we have broken the record. We have a petabyte of data.
A peta. Oh, there's another big number.
There you go.
Back to Latin today.
That's right.
A petabyte is?
2 to the 50th.
Can there be that amount of data?
Well,
isn't that more than the stars in the universe or something?
It is a tremendous amount. It's okay. 1024 times 1024 gigabytes.
Whoa.
Which is a lot of hard drives.
That would, max out mine, I think.
Yeah.
Just answer this question, too. That now that you have freed up the quarks, and you can you actually, maybe, we think that's the most fundamental part in the nucleus. Could it be subdivisible?
Well, there have been some speculation that it might be. We have not seen any evidence of that so far.
Have you looked for that?
Not very much, but...
Get right on it, would you? when you seem to be talking about new and surprising things, I'm wondering, could there be something really, new and surprising that you don't look for and it pops out, like the subdivision of a mini quark or something?
We don't expect that from the current state of the theory, but people have been surprised by what the smallest particle that's subdivisible is already a number of times.
Do we need any new physics to explain what's going on here?
Well, that's not known yet. We're still trying to understand why the matter is so sticky. We have some glimpses of stickiness like that using the theory of quantum chromodynamics, but we don't yet know if we can reproduce the data quantitatively with that.
Talking with Barbara Yatsak from Stony Brook University here at Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. This is interesting stuff. Can you figure out? I mean, talking about the stickiness business, can you understand why that the quarks are bound so tightly from this?
Well, we think we understand why they're bound so tightly from the underlying theory. Mm-hmm. Now, if we don't understand why they're bound so tightly at the temperatures that we achieve, which is, by the way, about a trillion degrees, which is about 40,000 times the temperature at the center of the sun.
Hmm. Let's see if we can get a quick phone call in here. Let's go out to Delaware. Hi, Phil.
Hey, how you doing? Very interesting show. I always listen. Perhaps more than one question. I'll try not to take too much time. My first question is to the researchers. Why did your group nominate gold as the best candidate for the experimental protocol?
Probably it was most expensive they can get. No.
No, that's a really good question. What we were looking for was the heaviest nucleus that we could put into the accelerator and accelerate. We picked gold because that's technically easiest for our accelerator. At CERN in Geneva, they pick lead. So they're certainly not going to turn lead into gold. They might turn lead into quark gluon plasma.
That's a nice phrase. Have you been practicing that one?
No.
All right, Phil, does that answer your question?
Well, yeah. Can I ask another one?
Sure.
Okay. Now, I trained as a chemist back in the 60s, and there were very many emergent theories about the contents of the nucleus. And I, over the years, although not a practicing scientist, I've devoted much thought to particle physics and subatomic structure and things like that. And I kind of think that the inner workings or inner content of the nucleus is very similar to what winds up into a black hole in the cosmos. In other words, at one end you have the microscopic view and the telescopic view, and they're two ends of the same animal.
Let me get an answer because I'm running out of time. Doctor, what do you think of that?
Well, I'm not sure what the question is.
Is there an analogy between a black hole and the insides of a...
I don't think so. I think the forces inside are quite different.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you learn anything about a black hole?
Well, it turns out that how much you can compress the quark gluon plasma might actually tell us something about making black holes. We think that there's quark gluon plasma in the middle of a neutron star. And we think that when supernovae are about to explode, you might actually have some quark gluon plasma.
So where do you go from here? Can you tweak it up another notch higher and find something else?
Well, I think our biggest issues now are really to find out, you know, how does this stuff really work? And we have some further things that we can study about it. We have already seen some very heavy quarks, charm and beauty quarks, but we don't yet know how the creation rate of these quarks and how their binding properties are affected by this hot, dense matter. And we also have to look at what happens at lower beam energy or with smaller systems.
To get any real satisfaction, I don't know, physicists are very competitive about beating the big guys at CERN, at Fermilab, things like that. Your little laboratory out there on Long Island.
Oh, it's a big laboratory. Yeah. We're
you don't have any buffalo roaming around there.
No, we do have some geese and turkeys, though.
But there's got to be some real satisfaction for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and
this is in some ways the most exciting time in my career because every few months we see something new.
Well, can't top that answer. I want to thank you very much for joining us this hour, Barbara Jacek, who is professor of physics at Stony Brook, and she's also a collaborator in the Phoenix Collaboration at Brookhaven National Laboratory out there in Upton, Long Island. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the astronomy. We're going to talk about the Hubble Space Telescope. So stay with us. We'll be right back.